Hey, everybody. It's the Charlie Kirk Show. Mark Halperin joins the program. We talk about who potentially Kamala Harris can pick as vice president and this entire unfolding election. We talk about Kamala Harris's radical track record on trans ideology and more. Become a member today. Members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. We must put Kamala Harris on trial immediately. We must make her defend the trans nonsense that is plaguing our country. Joining us now is Brandon Showalter, journalist from the Christian Post, author of Generation Indoctrination, a docu-podcast. Brandon, welcome to the program. Brandon, what is Kamala Harris's track record regarding the trans issue, specifically when it comes to children?
Well, Kamala Harris, in many ways, is kind of a perfect product of California, which has become what some refer to as a transgender sanctuary. Legislatively and culturally, that state, the Golden State, has enshrined gender ideology into all of its legal structures, into the law, into its institutions. And a cursory review of Kamala Harris's Twitter feed, both as vice president and before when she was a senator, reveals full-throated support of all things LGBTQ, especially in recent years of the TQ portion of that acronym. Just to give you an example, Charlie, when that Dylan Mulvaney influencer guy came to the White House, she sent him an effusive congratulatory letter after his appearance there when he interviewed Biden. And it's, I mean, it's kind of par for the course for a California left-wing politician. It seems that for all intents and purposes, LGBTQ dogma is the de facto religion of the day. And Kamala Harris is one of its chief acolytes in terms of those who are elected leaders.
Yeah. And by the way, she should have to answer for this. So she wrote a letter to the mentally challenged man, Dylan Mulvaney, who I really hope gets some treatment. Dylan
yes.
Mulvaney needs some treatment that is not surgery or drugs. He needs intense counseling. Kamala Harris says this, quote, "Dear Dylan, I send you my warmest greetings as you celebrate your 365th day of living authentically. Thank you for courageously sharing your story and your journey. I appreciate your continued advocacy for transgender equality, including during your visit to the White House last year." So let me understand this, Brandon. Does she believe that anybody can become a woman?
Well, it certainly seems to be, whether or not she really believes it or not, that's anybody's best guess, because I think that there are many Democrats who they're just going along with this because they feel sort of emotionally obligated to go along with all things LGBTQ because they have convinced themselves that it's the next frontier of civil rights. Whether or not anybody actually believes that a man can become a woman, I mean, only someone who is so thoroughly indoctrinated can actually believe that that's somehow possible physically, because we actually know it's of course impossible. But she's not afraid and has championed these lies for years about children shouldn't be afraid to be who they are, as though it is somehow possible to be something other than your actual sex. And so whether or not she really believes it, I can't get inside her head. I kind of doubt it, but she's happy to go along with these lies.
Well, but so then let's play this. This is cut 32. This is her welcoming the drag team for here. I don't know who these people are. Play cut 32.
Hi.
Hi.
Can we talk about it?
Yes.
She continues, and in one of her tweets, she says, I will appoint LGBTQ plus people. By the way, she got the acronym wrong. It's more than that now. It's 2IA plus, including transgender and gender nonconforming people to leadership roles throughout my administration because our government and our courts work best when they reflect the people they serve. That is very race Marxist. So, Brandon, can Kamala Harris answer the question, what is a woman?
Well, I don't think she would if she was asked point blank. She would probably pull a Ketanji Brown Jackson, as just like when Senator Blackburn did during her hearings. It's interesting that this is coming up, too, because when Brett Kavanaugh was, you know, being during his hearing, she was asking him a question about, is there any differences between, you know, men and women about the law and how it applies to them? Clearly, she was hinting at, you know, abortion being so she clearly does know what a woman is, because no man has ever gotten an abortion and never will. But it just sort of goes to show you yet again, Charlie, that this is the contradiction, the blatant contradiction that the Democratic Party as a whole and Kamala Harris in particular are willing to go along with in order to defend this insane fiction that a woman is whatever any person who says they are one, including men who put on woman face and wear womanhood like a costume, as those drag performers did. You saw that in that clip there. So this is the chief. You know, people want to talk about the big lie. Well, this is the big lie of our time.
So the based on your research, I believe it's fair to say that Kamala Harris is supportive of the mutilation of children for gender affirming care. Is that correct?
I see no reason to think that she isn't. I mean, she's been championing the LGBTQ cause and talking about defending trans rights, of which quote unquote gender affirming care is the foremost concern of the activists. And so, yes, I fully expect that in a Kamala Harris administration, we would see a full bore, even as Europe is backpedaling, even as scrutiny has emerged in many conservative states of these treatments, if you can even call them that, puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and these awful surgeries. I see no reason to think that Kamala Harris would not be fully supportive of that, in support of being who you are, this notion that in order to become your true self, you need to undergo these experimental drugs and surgeries. Her sister, Maya, for example, I mean, I would want to distinguish between individuals here. She is her own person, of course, but just to give you how closely tethered her family is, Maya was on the board of the Arcus Foundation, which is one of the major medical, LGBTQ foundations headed by John Stryker, the billionaire whose fortune is from Stryker Medical. If you go into hospital and you see the gurneys or the medical device equipment, that largesse has funded the Arcus Foundation, which then funds the ACLU, which then turns around and sues states like Arkansas and others that have prohibited trans in kids. Her sister, Kamala Harris's sister, was on the board of that organization, of the Arcus Foundation, for I believe 2 years, joined in 2017, and I believe left in 2019. I'm aware of feminists who have tried to bring their concerns to Kamala Harris about how insane, quote unquote, gender identity is, but I believe those concerns have fallen on deaf ears, and Kamala Harris continues to champion this notion that you can be something other than your sex with impunity.
Separate issue, but it's important to understand that feminism leads to the trans issue. If you dive into the literature of feminism, it's all about destroying the binary. That's always what they were talking about. It was about why can't men be more feminine and why can't women be more masculine. That's actually at the root of Gloria Steinem's feminine mystique and that entire movement back in the 60s. I want to play a piece of tape here. Let's play cut 34.
LGBTQ plus people are under assault. Children's hospitals have received bomb threats simply because they care for transgender youth. Every day, LGBTQ plus youth are enduring bullying and harassment. Well, tonight I have a message. We see you and we hear you, and you are not alone.
Certainly sounds like she's sympathetic to kids' parts being chopped off, Brandon.
Absolutely. And as to those bomb threats, I believe that's a reference to what was exposed at Boston Children's Hospital in 2022. Charlie, look, of course, I don't support any bomb threats being, you know, threatened for any hospital. But that is just, I would just want to see some more evidence of that. Of course, if that happened, I won't defend that bomb threats are never acceptable. But let's just get some context here. Boston Children's Hospital, and this is going on at all children's many children's hospitals across this country, are performing these grotesque surgeries, yes, even on minors. And I have documented receipts from medical journals showing that girls have had their breasts amputated who are as young as 13 years old. Boys have had vaginoplasties at 15 and 16. And this is not right-wing media. This is medical journals like JAMA Pediatrics, the Journal of Clinical Medicine, the Journal of Sexual Medicine. This is one of the worst child abuse and medical scandals that the world has ever seen, and Kamala Harris is happy to defend it with all of this nice-sounding language and euphemisms that obscure the truth of what's really going on. There's going to be a reckoning over these crimes against humanity, in my opinion, and she's going to regret saying those words that she did right there because she's covering up medical atrocities, and there's no two ways about it.
Brandon, I completely agree. Kamala Harris is... She's enthusiastic about children being able to be abused. She's a cheerleader for the abuse of children. That is Kamala Harris. What a dark soul she is. Are you ready to lose weight but not sure where to start? I understand. I was right where you are 2 years ago. Let me tell you why I chose the PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition Program. First, Dr. Ashley Lucas has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. Her program is based on years of research and is science-based. Second, the PhD program starts in nutrition. There's so much more. They know that 90% of permanent change comes from the mind, and they work on eliminating the reason you gain this weight in the first place. There's no shortcuts, pills, or injections, just solid, science-based nutrition and behavior change. And finally, probably most importantly, I lost 30 pounds. Look, they're amazing. If you want to lose weight, you got to go to myphdweightloss.com. I was just texting with Dr. Ashley Lucas today. If you're ready to lose weight for the last time, call 864-644-1900. Go online at myphdweightloss.com. Do what I did and what hundreds of my listeners have done and call today, 864-644-1900. I recommend their program. Dr. Ashley Lucas has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. Her program is based on years of research and is science-based. Second, the PhD program starts in nutrition, but it's so much more. Go to myphdweightloss.com, myphdweightloss.com. Call 864-644-1900. I lost over 30 pounds. Dr. Ashley Lucas, great American. Check it out, myphdweightloss.com. So, Brandon, you have a personal story from a California parent. Is that correct? Please tell us about it.
Yes. The parent that I'm speaking of is Ted Hudako. If people are familiar with the journalist Abigail Schreier, who wrote the Watershed book in 2020 called Irreversible Damage, she profiled his plight in February of 2022 in the City Journal. And then I and some other investigative reporters have since covered other aspects of his case. But should Kamala Harris become president, we can expect California, the trans sanctuary, will become a trans country, a trans sanctuary country. Because what people need to understand, Charlie, is that under the leadership of trans zealots, Kamala Harris being one and others like her in the state, this overtakes all of our relevant institutions, the family courts, all government entities, the legislature. This will control your life. We focus a lot in our podcast about the child abuse and the medical abuse in Generation Indoctrination, our podcast. But what is also extremely important is that how this fractures families. And Ted's case is a case study, really, of how this things can go wrong. A judge, very briefly, a judge removed his custody because he wouldn't support the affirmation. He was questioning about how to support his then minor son, who claimed to be female. And in violation of the court order, doctors at the gender clinic in San Francisco surgically implanted a puberty blocker in his minor son's arm. Again, that violated the court order, which said no gender identity related surgery. That man, Ted Hudako, has been through absolute hell. At every single turn, what we say is they cover all the exits. Trans activism will ruin and rule your life. I would very much urge everyone to go to listen to the full story of what this is like. If you go to generationindoctrination.com, you'll hear a 40-minute conversation that I had with this beleaguered father and his attorney about what this is like. But if any parent who is listening to me today thinks that this can't happen to them, well, that's what everyone says when they call me. And Ted Hudako's story it really is very typical of what can happen if you are forced to interface with family courts or the government when transgender activism takes over.
Well, here's Elon Musk with Jordan Peterson on Daily Wire Plus, he's one of the smartest and is the richest man in the world, who fell for this trans poison. And he lost his kid because of it. Play cut 38.
I was essentially tricked into signing documents for one of my older boys, Xavier. I was told, Xavier might commit suicide if he
did. That was a lie right from the outset.
Incredibly evil. And I agree with you that people that have been promoting this should go to prison.
So I was
tricked into doing this. It wasn't explained to me that puberty blockers are actually just sterilization drugs. And so I lost my son, essentially. They call it dead naming for a reason.
Yeah,
the reason it's called dead naming is because your son is dead. So my son Xavier is dead, killed by the woke mind virus.
And Kamala Harris is the Dr. Fauci of the woke mind virus. She's pushing it into every home. Final thoughts, Brandon. Kamala Harris, if Kamala Harris is to win the presidency, what would that mean for children in this country?
I think it would mean that the children of America would be indoctrinated into gender ideology even more thoroughly than they already are. You can expect to see sterilization drugs like blockers and hormones to become the policy across nationwide. I think you're going to expect to see the full bore entrenchment of this insanity on a level it's already bad even now with Rachel Levine at number two in HHS and Javier Becerra. They're already defending it. The White House has only backpedaled a little bit saying they don't support trans surgeries on minors, but even that was just a political move. You can expect to see tragic stories like Ted Hudako become amplified and Elon Musk be amplified even more unless this is somehow stopped. I would urge everyone, if they can, to go listen to our documentary podcast at the Christian Post, GenerationIndoctrination.com. And if you want to see what this is doing to families across the political spectrum, go to deadnamedocumentary.com and you'll see the searing pain that this causes families. And whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent, a centrist or apolitical, you need to care about this, because what could be more important than the health and welfare of our children? I don't think any American, regardless of their politics, anyone who's halfway decent wants to see a child wind up sterile and surgically disfigured. This is
That's
the issue of the day as far as I'm concerned.
Harris' presidency will lead to a woke mind virus pandemic, the likes of which we do not have a safe and effective vaccine. Thank you so much, Brandon. Joining us now is Mark Halperin, political reporter, also Two-Way TV, which I actually saw an episode of recently. I really liked it. Blake and I were chatting. I said, can we get Mark on the show? Really informative and great stuff. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Nice, kind words for Two-Way, and honored to be on with you, Charlie.
It was really great. I just want people to check out Two-Way because it's this bipartisan, really respectful back and forth between you and everyday Americans and what they're hearing on the ground. I got a lot out of it, so people should check it out, Two-Way TV on YouTube. Mark, you were able to report the Biden story before anybody else with incredible precision and accuracy, despite mockery from some people in the more let's just say higher levels of established media. Tell us about how you're able to get that story so quickly and so correct.
Well, I've been at it for a long time, and people say, how do you know which sources to trust? It's just over time you learn who's reliable and who's not, who's careless and who's careful. And like a lot of great stories that get broken, started with just luck. Just somebody called me, a really surprising person. I can't say who it was, but someone who you wouldn't think would be a source for this. And he gave me a little piece of it. And then I just kept calling different people. And then someone sent me an email with the whole thing just laid out. And they said they were quite confident it was true. I think this was all set in motion well before the White House has acknowledged. And so I think I was actually late to the story, but I was able to be very confident that what I was told was true. And I didn't mind when the White House said it wasn't true, because what are they going to say? Oh, yeah, we're going to announce for the president that he's not going to seek the nomination. So I was confident and grateful to the folks who helped me break it.
Congratulations. It was a huge scoop. So, Mark, kind of entertain my speculation here, because my mind goes even further back. Is there any evidence that there were people within the Democrat Party or the Biden-Harris campaign that were pushing for a summer debate for Joe Biden as a potential forcing function because they were worried about his collapsing poll numbers in May and early June?
I know that's a common theory amongst many. I have no reason to think it's true. What was motivating them was a belief that Joe Biden couldn't win the election on the trajectory they were on, that they couldn't wait to the fall to have debates because by then the whole thing would be cooked in. And they thought they could prepare him well enough that he would do significantly better than he did. So I know people like to speculate about that, but according to my reporting, it was just the opposite. They were using it to try to advance his prospects of beating Donald Trump because they saw no other way to cut the lead, which was small, but very durable and very dangerous, because Joe Biden had maybe one path to Electoral College victory, but probably zero.
And you've reported this before, which is that Joe Biden only had one path and one path only. No one's ever been able to win the White House with just one path. And that was always a major concern. So this entire saga, for those of us that are in the conservative world, has been a very interesting window into who actually holds the power in the Democrat Party. I'm not actually even sure what the answer to that is, Mark. Who are the two or three stakeholders or individuals or families that finally was able to convince Biden? And what was that persuasive element? And finally, who are the most powerful individuals in the Democrat Party?
Yeah. So look, the Republican Party has for almost a decade now had a clear power center, Donald J. Trump. And those who he favored, those who supported the MAGA agenda, they've done very well. And those who haven't have tended to either be forced into retirement or lost elections. That's pretty clear. It's just not analogous on the other side. It's asymmetrical. Joe Biden got elected because Bernie Sanders would look like he was going to be the nominee. I call him an accidental president, and was stunned when he ran the first time, even more stunned when he chose to run for re-election. I don't think there is a power center in the party, even with an incumbent president. There's different centers of power. There's the donors. There's the grassroots. There's the squad. There's the president. There's the congressional leaders. In this case, I'm piecing together still the full story of how this happened, what exactly forced his hand, because I was very skeptical, Charlie, that he'd give up the nomination. You know, this is his life dream. He strongly believed that he was the only person who could beat Donald Trump. He didn't believe the vice president could, I'm told. And so what made him give it up? I know Nancy Pelosi was at the center of it. And if you're looking for one person in this storyline, and if you're looking for one person who says still, even though she's no longer speaker, has the power in the party, I'd say Nancy Pelosi is first among equals. I think I'll eventually piece it together. But again, suffice to say, she determined that her friend would bring the Democratic Party down if he stayed as a nominee. And she used a combination of delicious carrots and very rough and pointy rocks to get him to step aside.
And she's the only one with the political skill that was able to get this done as well, because this was not easy. This took quite a lot of precision. This is someone with a lot of experience, a lot of
That's
connection,
right.
and discipline,
yep.
remarkable amount of discipline. And so I think you're right, and she works her tail off. Like Nancy Pelosi or not, she puts in the hours, and she saw a problem, and she tried to fix it. For all intents and purposes, she did. Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. You've asked, and MyPillow listened. They're finally bringing you the most requested offer ever. Right now, you can get the queen-size premium MyPillow for only $19.98. MyPillow is made with patented adjustable fill. It adjusts to your exact individual needs, regardless of your sleep position. It helps keep your neck aligned and holds its shape all night long, so you get the best sleep of your life. But that's not all. Get their six-piece kitchen and bath towel set for only $25. The brand new mattress topper for as low as $69.98, and their famous MyPillow bed sheets for as low as $25, and so much more. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-875-0425. Use promo code Kirk to get huge discounts on all MyPillow products, including the premium queen-size MyPillow for only $19.98. That's the lowest price ever. Don't delay. Order today. Use promo code Kirk at checkout. That is promo code Kirk at MyPillow.com. Check it out right now. Wonderful organization, MyPillow.com. So, Mark, you've been doing a lot of reporting on who Kamala Harris might choose as her vice president. There's a lot of whispers. There's a lot of rumors. The finalists seem to be Mark Kelly, Josh Shapiro, and maybe Cooper or Walz as dark horses. But it seems like the two ones that are most mentioned right now are Mark Kelly and Josh Shapiro. The way I analyze that is Mark Kelly is a more ambitious or aggressive pick, thinking that you can open up the Sun Belt, thinking that you can maybe win Arizona, Nevada, whereas Josh Shapiro might be a pure Rust Belt play. However, might not help you very much in Michigan, given with a Gaza component still in play. Mark, do you agree with that analysis, and who do you think the finalists actually are?
Yeah, so I have a maybe a more traditional view of this, and it's based on just studying every deep stake since I started in the business. The most important thing, number one, and it's really number one through 20, is you got to pick someone who people see as qualified to be president. If you pass that test, everything else is minor in both the upside and the downside. If you fail to pass that test, if you pick someone who doesn't meet the standard, it can really hurt your campaign. So when you're evaluating, and I believe that the vice president knows this, when you're evaluating who to pick, that's the focus. It's not these subsidiary considerations. Mm-hmm. So once you clear that bar, then the second consideration, I believe, is not can they bring one state or even a region, but do they create kind of an alchemy, kind of a national storyline, either because it's balancing the top of the ticket. Think of Bush Cheney, someone who wasn't perceived as having national security experience, coupled with someone who did, or Clinton Gore 92, right? And I think the model that the people around the vice president are interested in is there an alchemy of kind of a buddy picture where the two of them together create a tableau of change, of youth, of energy, of dynamism, and whatever it is that they want the country to think Donald Trump isn't. And so I think in both Kelly and Shapiro, and I've thought for a while that those two are the most amongst the most likely, I think they see a narrative, a storyline of pairing them together to say, this is different, this is exciting, to capture the public imagination. Because I'll say, most Americans who are going to decide this election, they're not paying much attention. They don't have much of a view of Vice President Harris at this point, maybe a wispy one. I think in the end, right now, based on my reporting over the weekend, that Shapiro is the most likely. I think there are people in the vice president's world who are even starting to think about how that announcement would go, what that rollout would be like. But she's got some time. And because of the changing dynamics every day, I think they're considering over and over again, what makes sense? What's the best matchup to create a national picture that could elevate her chances?
Now, I don't want to misquote you, Mark, but I believe you said in one of your two-way broadcasts that you've long said the best way to beat Trump is with a black candidate and a Jewish candidate. Am I incorrect in that? Saying that?
I have. It's a little bit tongue in cheek. Look, I'm not politically correct about this stuff. I'm just realistic about it. And I, you know, as I've said, it's just, to me, it's a funny notion that if you're really thinking, oh my goodness, we've got to get rid of Joe Biden. He can't beat Trump. The party has to come together, threaten him, cajole him, flatter him, whatever it is. And then they turn to a black woman who's unpopular and a Jewish American who's unknown. It's just kind of comical. They take all that energy, and then they turn to what, again, is a roll of the dice. There's sexism, there's anti-Semitism. I don't know how widespread it is, but certainly you're running a risk with that kind of ticket. And again, Donald Trump is the second best presidential candidate I've ever covered. He's extremely skillful. And I think knowing how to take advantage of whatever vulnerabilities there would be demographically there is something the Democrats have to consider. It's just a reality of politics.
So I think that's really well put. Mark, there's been a lot of reporting in the last year about how the Republican Party and Donald Trump's path to a second term goes through low propensity voters. There's been a realignment where higher propensity voters tend to favor Democrats and lower propensity voters are more and more in the Republican category and the Republican camp. With that being said, and with those dynamics at play, do you think that Kamala Harris becoming the nominee might actually get us back to a form that we recognize more, where suburban and boomer voters might actually gravitate more towards Republicans and lower propensity voters of color might get back into the Democrat category? What do you make of that?
You framed it perfectly, Charlie. We just don't know. Look, this is about the Electoral College. It's all that matters. And undergirding that's about the demographics. Every election is a base election and a persuasion election. People sometimes like to say, oh, this one's a base election. Every election's both. And I think what you're seeing now is a lot of unknown. I think Harris could win this election easily. I think it could be a nail biter that could go either way. And I think she could be blown out. And I don't think, you know, we're all impatient to know. I don't think we'll know till September. You think about the 3 weeks we've just gone through, almost 4 weeks, all the extraordinary events from the debate to the pressure to get Joe Biden out to the assassination attempt to the miraculous switch from Biden to Harris in within a day. You think about all of that and wonder now, where's the electorate as we head into a very intense effort by the Republicans to disqualify Kamala Harris and her VP pick, her convention? I don't think we're going to see how this settles down and answer the question you asked about real potential realignment until we get to the fall. There's no doubt that she has some of Joe Biden's baggage, including the Biden-Harris record. There's no doubt that she doesn't have a lot of his baggage. She's not in her 80s. But she's got baggage and strength of her own. And can she appeal more to younger voters, black voters, the so-called Obama coalition of the ascendant, which does have a lower propensity to turn out. We just don't know. I also think, although J.D. Vance is not having the best week of his career, part of why he was picked was to get some of those low propensity Trump voters, rural and exurban voters in your state, in all the battleground states, to turn out. And I think people are underestimating his capacity to do that because he's offended the sensibilities of other voters, some of whom Republicans need, but a lot of whom are just liberals who are never going to vote for the ticket anyway.
Very smart. Mark, really quick, but can you just please tell the audience exactly how they can check out Two-Way? I think some of our audience would actually enjoy engaging in that.
Yeah, love to have all of your folks come and check it out. You can go to my Twitter account. We announce them, the events. We have one program every morning, 9 Eastern time, called The Morning Meeting. You can check that out on Two-Way TV on YouTube. But again, follow me on Twitter, Mark Halpern, or go sign up for my Substack. And that's the best way to learn when the programs are. We're new, and we don't have a regular schedule except for that 9 a.m. Eastern time program.
Check out Two-Way TV. So, Mark, if you were giving objective advice to the Trump campaign, looking at the race of where it is now and understanding his track record of debating, for better or for worse, would you advise him to debate against Kamala Harris?
I never advise politicians, Charlie, but I can tell you from talking to Republicans, whose judgment I trust, that most of them, I would say, favor a debate, but some of them are a little worried. They're a little wary of Kamala Harris could do well in a debate, and they're not sure he needs it. So I love the debate about debates. I'm a sucker for it. I think it's just so interesting. And once the Commission on Presidential Debates got blown up, it became the Wild West here. So again, as I said, I think the outcome of the election is unknown. I think the question of whether there'll be one or more debates is unknown. In the end, I think Donald Trump will want to do it. I think Kamala Harris will want to do it. So I think there'll be at least one debate, whether he should or not. As I said, my sources mostly favor it, but not all.
So you mentioned something that JD, you know, has been attacked a lot this last week. However, you think that some people might be underestimating his appeal in the certain Rust Belt areas as some of those positives. Can you elaborate more on that?
Well, look, it's hard to measure these things quantitatively, but there's no doubt that Sarah Palin helped John McCain a lot more than people normally would say. They'd normally say she was a national joke, she hurt the ticket. And she clearly did with some voters, but she helped with others. And I think one of the things that the Trump people cited when he moved towards picking Vance, and as you know, many people urged him not to. They didn't think it was the best pick. But those who supported it, amongst the things I heard from them all the time, was you've got these, as you said, we said earlier segment, low propensity voters, particularly in the rural areas and the exurban areas, and that exists in all the battleground states, who like Donald Trump, but may not connect with him as well as J.D. Vance does. J.D. Vance, they think, has almost a magical, almost a mystical capacity through his story, through his personality, through his rhetoric, to reach those folks and get them to turn out. And as we saw in the difference between 2016 and 2020, a narrow Trump win versus a narrow Trump loss, to some extent, was the drop off in those voters. Now, the Biden campaign versus the Trump campaign, as you know, the Trump campaign thought they could do very well with young male Hispanic and Black voters. We'll see if that sustains. But to the extent the Trump campaign has got a job to do that they think can be decisive, it's turning out those low propensity rural and exurban voters. And as I said, they think J.D. Vance can help supercharge those efforts, teaming up with Donald Trump.
Yeah. And the recipe for the Trump campaign will also, how do you do with boomers? Because Biden was actually doing better with baby boomer voters. Have you seen any data of how they feel now that the race is largely reset?
I've seen some public and private, but as I said, I don't much care about the data, respectfully, until after Labor Day. I think there's so much going on, and the voters we really care about, they're it's August for them. They're maybe paying attention to the Olympics. Maybe they're paying some attention to the news, but this is a volatile time. And until we get to Labor Day and we've seen whatever convention bounce they're going to get, whatever impact the vice presidential selection of the Democrats has, I think that'll kind of settle down and resolve itself by the fall. For now, I think we've seen in what data there's available, Harris is doing better than Biden. She's still behind. She still really doesn't have an electoral college path any more than Joe Biden did. But she clearly is doing better, including with boomers, including with young people, including with Black voters. A lot of the groups where Donald Trump was, by historical standards, overperforming. And that's why the Biden people realized they had no path, because Donald Trump was doing great with his folks and pretty good with normal what are normally Democratic constituencies.
So Mark, the best path for Kamala has to be run the table in the Rust Belt and or maybe pick off a Sun Belt state. Is that correct?
Yeah. Look, I spent the weekend asking Republican and Democratic strategists with presidential campaign experience of the four Sunbelt states, which one does Harris have the best chance of putting in play? And I got about a 25% chance of vote for all of them. You know, it's not clear. And that's irrespective of who she might pick as a running mate. So I think, you know, don't overestimate or underestimate the chances she may have problems with that congressional district in Omaha, which she needs, even if she gets the three Rust Belt states. So I think she's got to worry about that CD, that congressional district, and then all seven battleground states. I don't think she can take any of them for granted. But sure, today you'd say her path is the same very narrow, singular one that Joe Biden had, which is Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Omaha.
It's a heavy lift to have to run the table.
Yeah.
Because if that ends
Absolutely.
Up being the case.
No one's ever done it.
Yeah. The last 30 days, if you're the Trump campaign, you're smiling. You're like, we just have to go 1-for-3. And we could be, if that ends up being the case, if she's not able to broaden the map to the Sun Belt. Mark Halperin, excellent analysis.
Thank you
so much. Everyone check out Two-Way TV and come back sometime. Thanks so much.
Honored to be invited on. Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.